Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
It's Wednesday the 13th of January and welcome to another episode of Reconstruction, the weekly podcast from the Construction Index, with me, David Taylor, and Phil Bishop, editor of our daily online news service. How are you doing, Phil?
Morning, David. Not too bad at all. How are you doing?
Really good. I'm very well. I mean, apart from the fact that the cat was locked in my office last night and crapped underneath my desk, everything's fine. All cleared up, but a little bit funky still, I'm afraid.
Oh dear, oh dear. Well, I'm glad this is on Zoom and not Smell-O-Vision that we're talking to each other.
Absolutely, yeah, yes. Yes, you don't know how lucky you are. So, in terms of global news, it's been quite an exciting week. But in terms of construction news, has it been quite as stimulating? Anything happening out there, Phil?
Well, there's always talking points in this industry. There's lots going on still, despite the lockdown. But the first thing I wanted to talk about, and perhaps redress, do you remember shortly before, a couple of days before Christmas, we did our review of the year 2020, and we looked back, and I, trying to be upbeat and bullish, was expressing or commenting on how resilient the construction industry had appeared to be,
yes,
in the face of the COVID crisis, and all, you know, so many parts of the industry were struggling, but construction had, by and large, come through it reasonably resiliently.
Yeah.
I'm now feeling less optimistic about it, and a couple of things have combined to that. I mean, the third national lockdown is putting the gloom and doom on everything anyway, even though construction is still working through it, as we know. But it was something that I read that the Chancellor was saying this week or at the weekend, that the economy is going to get worse before it gets better. Mm-hmm. So there's more corporate carnage, more suffering, financial suffering to come in all of this, which didn't come as a surprise, I suppose, but it's still kind of depressing. It's still a bit of a downer. And then, coupled with that, the Construction Leadership Council put out a document, a briefing note on claims and disputes this week, which didn't make for particularly exciting or upbeat reading either. To quote, basically, they're saying that there's going to be legal warfare breaking out this year, whereas in 2020, a lot of these sort of smaller, easier to fix contractual disputes were sorted out. The big stuff has all been pushed onto the back burner for the time being. So they say, quote, "There remains a real concern that in 2021, as we reach the completion of projects entered into pre-pandemic and at the end of financial and tax years, businesses will become embroiled in costly and long-running disputes over the effects of COVID-19 on projects." Mm. So, in other words, we've all been working together over the past 10 months, 9 months, I guess, since the March 1st national lockdown, March 2020. Everyone sort of put arguments to one side. But at some point, all those latent legal rows are going to come out. And the point of the briefing note from Construction Leadership Council, as I see it, was basically they were just saying, play nicely, please, people. We know it's going to get bad, but you know, be reasonable, be sensible.
Yes, it came across as a rather plaintive appeal, didn't it? I thought at the end of the piece. I mean, I'm certainly not surprised to hear that there are some disputes brewing, because clearly there's been a lot of disruption and everybody's going to fight their corner and try and protect their own interests. But yeah, they said that the CLC asks that industry works together to support the long-term health of our sector by constructively resolving all contractual disputes arising from the pandemic, which I think is that would be nice. But asking people to constructively resolve all contractual disputes is a bit of a tall order, because people aren't that generous to their opponents when it comes to legal action, are they?
Well, it's dog eat dog, isn't it? And little dogs tend to get eaten quicker than big dogs.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is interesting also to see that, you know, it all comes down to money at the end, because somewhere in the report they make the point that they don't actually think that there's going to be too much dispute arising from delays to projects, because we're all in the same boat. You know, sites had to close down during the first lockdown, and the delay to projects has been inevitable, and everybody's in the same boat. But everybody's financial problems aren't the same, and everybody's financial problems are unique to them. And I think that's where the difference is. The disputes are going to be over money, really, apart from anything else, which is really not to be, you know, no surprise, I think.
Yeah, it's dispiriting, I think, is the best way I can put it. But, you know, it's going to happen.
They say also, I thought this is quite an interesting observation, that 2021 will bring a perfect storm.
Yes.
But all the factors, if you add them all together, it's not really surprising. A negative economic environment, EU exit, reduced construction market activity, the end of government business support schemes, the introduction of reverse charge VAT, and a significant increase in the number of claims across the supply chain. So you add all that up, and there's plenty of scope for dispute there, isn't there?
On the plus side, let's get positive again. I've had a few trading updates from house builders this week. Persimmons this morning, was it Barclay Group yesterday?
Right.
I can't remember who else, but some of the big stock market listed big house builders. And they're all looking pretty good. The house builders are still selling, and Persimmon was saying that their build rate is pretty much what it was pre-pandemic. And while there are, you know, fears and challenges ahead, they're pretty upbeat and pretty confident about things. And their forward sales are up on a year ago. So there are parts and big parts of the construction industry that are full steam ahead, folks. Full steam ahead.
Oh, so that's good.
That's the encouraging news. So we have focus on the positives.
Something else that is full steam ahead, it appears, is HS2, obviously the big mega project that everybody's focused on at the moment, and that's had some interesting news to tell this week, hasn't it?
Yes, it seemed like a fairly routine bit of housekeeping that they're doing, internal management of staff rosters and who's working where and so on. But it's an emotive subject. Let me explain. The HS2 Limited, the client organisation, has done a deal with a company called Biosite Systems, which is part of some Swedish company. I can't remember what the name of the parent company is. And Biosite Systems are... what they do for the construction industry, by and large, is site security systems, fingerprint technology, where you touch your fingerprint on the what is effectively the key of the door to get onto site, and it's a modern version of clocking in and clocking out.
Yeah,
and rather than each work site, each contractor across the length of the Birmingham to London project having its own systems for monitoring who's coming and going and who's working and who's authorised to be on site and so on, they are putting them all together in this one big database. So the client and this technology company are gathering all the data, so it's all been centrally gathered. And that sounds perfectly reasonable and efficient, and they're saying they call it the digital health and safety passport system. As ever, they're saying we're doing this in the name of health and safety, remove bureaucracy, and if we're all using the same system, great. The reason why it's kind of emotive, do you remember last autumn, September I think it was, when you and I talked about a rating tool, an app that the Asbestos Removal Contractors Association set up, an asbestos labour feedback app, which is a way of anyone working in asbestos can have, you know, how's my driving, how's good my work, and they can be rated, so that anyone looking to hire an asbestos removal specialist, we're talking about individuals here, not companies,
You
can say, well, I've got 5 stars, I'm really good, or someone's only got 2 stars because they're a bit, they turn up late and they're a bit rubbish or whatever.
Yeah.
And this immediately
caught the eye of the Unite trade union, who thought, well, that sounds a bit like, possibly, or has the potential to be a bit like, a blacklisting database. If someone's only got one star on this ratings app, they're not going to get much work. And the Asbestos Removal Contractors Association assured us that, no, it's not holding that sort of stuff at all. And it's nothing to do with whether people are troublemakers or lefties or anarchists or whatever. It's purely that they're competent. And this person is they've got lots of certificates in what they do and so on. Yeah. And similarly, the HS2 database, I mean, it's not gathering information, as far as we know, on the desirability of employees, like the famous industry blacklist did. Mm-hmm. But it will hold an awful lot of detail. And I don't know. I know that most people are increasingly relaxed about how much information is held by them. I mean, I know that DVLC or DVLA holds, knows where I live, and all sorts of government organisations know where I live and how old I am and possibly what blood type I am, and Netflix know what I've been watching on television and this sort of thing. I mean, the information that Mark Zuckerberg has on people who have got Facebook or active on Facebook is extraordinary, as we know. And so it's just an emotive subject, the whole idea of big database holding all this information. How do you feel on it?
Well, I think it's probably justified. I mean, just like the asbestos app, the main justification is health and safety. Obviously, security is another major factor. And as you say, people will quite willingly surrender quite personal information to their social media suppliers, Facebook and Instagram and all the rest of it, and they have all sorts of information about us, which we surrender in return for having a great social media product.
Often unwittingly. I mean, the cookies are trawling all kinds of information about what we've been up to.
Yes, that is true. And of course, you notice this when you see adverts pop up and you've been looking at fridges online somewhere, and all of a sudden you're bombarded with adverts for refrigeration systems and stuff like that. No, it is. We give away an awful lot of personal information, often, as you rightly point out, without actually being aware of it. And I think here they're being explicit. They're saying, this is exactly why we want to do it. We want to monitor the health and safety of our sites. We want to ensure we have safe sites and secure sites. And I think on a major civil engineering project, you can't argue with it. You do need that. And they, I don't know exactly what biometric information they're looking for. They say that there's a central online pre-induction before undertaking a local site induction, and people will provide provide biometric information to generate their global identification or digital passport. They don't actually say exactly what information it is, but I don't think it's going to be invasive. It's not going to be your inside leg measurement and stuff like that. It will be, maybe your age, medical history,
and your fingerprint, presumably.
Your fingerprint, because that is how you get into site.
So I don't know. I mean, even though we are no longer subject to European law, we've translated the GDPR, the Global Data Protection Regulation, or General Regulation on Data Protection, or whatever it's called, has been translated into British law. So there is still heavy regulation on how data can be used and transferred. But will the police be able to, if they've got a fingerprint of Johnny or Jenny burglar that they want to find out whose fingerprint it is, will they be able to ask HS2, is this one of your people?
Well, we aren't told that. And to be fair, I certainly haven't asked them that.
Maybe that's a good thing, people think. I mean, if we can rule out, people always say, if you've got nothing to fear, you've got nothing to fear, nothing to hide, nothing to fear. So
yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know, it's just always a little bit big brothery, though, isn't it?
Well, it is a bit, and us Brits do sort of tend to rail against things like that. I mean, I don't think anybody is really seriously suggested recently that we should have national identity cards like they have in other countries. I remember the last time it was seriously suggested, probably in, I think, under Margaret Thatcher's government, there was a huge outcry that, you know, we shouldn't have be forced to carry identity cards like you are on the continent. So we don't like that sort of thing. We don't like to be followed and watched. Although we're, in terms of surveillance, visual surveillance, we're one of the most watched societies in the world, as far as I'm aware. There are CCTV cameras in every high street watching every single movement. So already Big Brother's got an eye on us.
And it's almost impossible to live a normal functioning life these days without a smartphone. I mean, banks certainly seem to expect you to have a smartphone to do your banking there. And obviously that is unless you're particularly clever about switching all the tracking devices and cookies and monitors and everything off.
Yeah.
I mean, an awful lot of information can be collated from people's phones. So they're almost give it another 10 years, that will be an ID card, I think.
Well, it will, yes. And in terms of tracking your movements, I was recently talking to somebody about this app called What Three Words. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm familiar with that. Yes, that's excellent. I haven't used it, but I'm very familiar with it.
It's got huge benefits. You know, if there's an emergency, you can just dial in the three relevant words. It's for those who don't know what it is, this outfit that has developed this app has carved up the entire surface of the Earth into 3-meter squares, and each square can be instantly identified by the combination of 3 different words, completely randomly generated words, I think. Although I did see some criticism about a war memorial, which was its location used 3 words, which in combination didn't really seem appropriate to a war memorial. It's that kind of thing. That's the sort of criticism I've seen of it. And I was actually reading about this online just the other day. And surprise, surprise, this very morning on my Facebook, a What Three Words ad popped up. So, you know, it knows that I'm looking at them, and they presumably know that I'm looking at them. I know what 3 words identify my office, for example.
What are they? Tell everyone that. I know you shouldn't tell everyone that.
I'm not going to tell you those words.
All those people you've been writing about, like, I'm knocking on your door seeking reparations.
Yeah. But, you know, that has been hailed as this other person who I was discussing it with thought it was absolutely brilliant. It's fantastic. You know, if there's an emergency, you just give What Three Words. If you're lost on the mountain, you just dial in What Three Words and a helicopter will be there to lift you off in no time. This particular chap I was talking to about it is a keen fisherman with a boat which he takes out into the Bristol Channel quite regularly, and he thinks this is great now he's got this app, which it is. But, you know, it's 6 of one, half dozen of the other. What you get, you have to surrender a certain amount of information to get the benefit. I suppose the question is, are we giving away more information than we ought to?
I don't have a Facebook account, and I don't use it for that very reason. And people laugh at me for being such a Luddite, but I'm not prepared to be followed and prodded into that much. And even I'm quite rigorous about my cookies, so I don't get, or don't usually, occasionally they get through, but I don't usually get adverts tailored to me. I get entirely inappropriate adverts. Although I do notice I'm getting an awful lot of adverts for Stenner stairlifts and things like that.
That's because they know exactly how old you are and how infirm.
Well, I attribute that to not too many years ago. My wife thought it'd be funny for my 50th birthday to get me Saga membership or Saga magazine, now that I was old enough to be allowed it. And I think somewhere there's a record of that happened a few years ago.
Well, there we are. We can't, you know, you can't escape the technology, and it is everywhere. And, you know, as I just said, it has huge benefits. And where would we be without our mobile phones? One thing, I want to plug the magazine here, because we've got a...
I was just going to say, I've been flicking through that, talking of technology. Yes. You've been writing about some interesting stuff.
Well, not me personally, actually. I have to say, it was our colleague, Lisa Russell, who is our sort of technology specialist. She's also our international editor. She wrote a series of articles in the latest issue, which is out now. It's a December-January issue, on technology, and specifically on the use of artificial intelligence in construction. And, you know, construction is often pilloried for being an old-fashioned and technology-averse industry. Well, I suppose compared to social media. It is, but really, it has embraced appropriate technology quite, you know, in a very intelligent and useful way recently. There are three articles in the magazine, and the common theme is artificial intelligence or AI. And the first one is, we discussed this tangentially in a previous podcast, the contractor Winvic is very keen on technology. I suppose they are one of the pioneers, because I think when we talked about them last time, they had their virtual, I can't remember what they called it now, but it was a sort of a virtual site they were using to train people.
They also had a technology, it was almost like Tom Cruise in Minority Report, where they could detect an accident before it happened, kind of thing.
Well,
like,
this is what this article is about. They've teamed up with the University of the West of England, and they have something called their Big Data Enterprise and Artificial Intelligence Lab, or Big Deal for short, and a video technology specialist called One Big Circle, or OBC. And the three organisations have teamed up in this project, which they call, what do they call it? I can't remember what they call it. Oh, Computer Vision Smart is the name of the project. And they're researching the use of artificial intelligence on a site in Leicestershire for a big logistics company. It's at Mercia Park in Leicestershire. Here, Winvic are building several very large steel frame warehouses. And they're pioneering this system where they've placed cameras, 360 degree cameras all around the site. And these are constantly monitoring the site, the various movements, the developments and the progress of the construction on site. They describe it as a 24/7 on-site eye in the sky health and safety alert system. So again, the ostensible purpose of this is to enhance health and safety on site. And the interesting thing about it is not just that they're watching people and seeing what they're up to. They're actually using predictive machine learning so that the AI system, the artificial intelligence system, can literally learn to recognize hazards. So I don't know exactly how they do it. I mean, it is very, very technical. But they use a geographic information system, GIS system, to make the AI system, in fact, I'll quote from the article, the AI will be aware of the exact locations of personnel and plant and will learn to identify safe zones, essentially drawing a virtual radius around potential hazards. So what it'll do is it'll learn to recognise risks and dangers, which, you know, potentially the people on site, the actual humans on site, aren't aware of. You know, the machinery, the equipment, the computer will spot these hazards, and then they will identify and notify people on site through their smartphones initially, but possibly through wearable technology like smart watches and that kind of thing. They will notify people if they think they're in danger. So, I mean, this is a remarkable development, because no, it won't rely on humans to spot things so much as the machine will be there first. It'll spot these things before they happen.
It sounds absolutely, well, it is absolutely fantastic, assuming it works, and no reason to doubt it. But obviously it's a good thing that the accidents don't happen, both for individuals not getting hurt and for the smoothness of the project and the progress of works and so on. But will there come a time, if every site has this routinely, rather like in Minority Report, Tom Cruise arrests the bad guy who hasn't actually done anything because computer says you're going to do something, will you be prosecuted in future for health and safety offences that you haven't done, but the computer said that you might have caused, you could have caused, you have potential to cause? It opens up a can of worms there.
Well, it does. That's an interesting point. I must confess, I haven't seen that Tom Cruise film, so I'm not aware of that. But the point you make is a very good one. If people are guilty of being lax with their health and safety on site and allow hazardous situations to arise, then inevitably, if those are detected, they will be open to censure. If the machine detects something like that before the culprit is even aware that they're going to actually be guilty of overlooking a health and safety breach, then Are they actually guilty? Are they guilty in advance? It's an interesting question.
Well, you can breach health and safety laws without there being, or regulations, without there actually being an accident. I mean, yes. Many people get prosecuted for walking on roofs without fall protection, without being tied off, and so on. And there are plenty of health and safety regulations you can breach where no one does get hurt. You don't have to fall to be prosecuted.
Yeah. I suppose if the system spots something like that instantly, I don't know, so let's give a simple example that somebody has erected some scaffolding without the necessary...
ties
or something like that. Obviously, if that scaffolding system were then used by the bricklayers or the cladding people, whoever it was, in an unsafe condition, then yes, you would have exposed them to danger. But if your health and safety artificial intelligence system spots the absence of those ties before anybody actually goes there, in other words, spots them as soon as the hazard exists, then it's a warning system, isn't it? It'll just send you a warning saying you've got to put those ties in, or you've got to put those clamps in, or whatever it happens to be.
And you as a contractor, if you were challenged by saying your scaffold isn't safe, you say, we haven't finished it yet.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
What I found interesting about your Winvic article, though, is it shatters two myths in one go. One is that construction is slow to adopt digital technology and a bit Luddite, which clearly this is not the case. The other is that many, myself included, tend to regard big sheds, essentially what we're talking about here, big sheds, as the less sophisticated end, the simple end of the construction. It's not like building the shard.
No.
It seems to be just a tin shed. And this is something that Winvic are very big in this sector. So you might have thought if someone was going to lead the charge on tech, you wouldn't expect it to be a company like Winvic. But actually they are doing.
They're
right at the front end of this, despite being ostensibly just a big shed builder.
Yes.
Which clearly is an unfair pejorative term.
Well, you've got to start somewhere. And with something as new and as highly complex as this, you don't really want to you don't want to trial it on something as complex as a shard, do you? You want to start.
I guess. Yeah.
You want to walk before you can run. And I should point out that this project at Mercia Park is a trial. It's not actually a full rollout of the system. And Winvic makes the point that the trial is mainly an exercise in data capture. So, you know, they are developing, the system's in development, they're trialing it, and clearly something like a big steel frame shed on an industrial park in the Leicestershire countryside is a pretty good place to start, I should think. So, you know, it's early days.
But another of Lisa's articles in the magazine this month does look at AI being used in high-rise buildings.
Not quite
the chard, but getting that way. And I thought that was interesting.
Yes. Well, this is Canary Wharf Contractors out in the east of London. And they've actually been using artificial intelligence on their current project for the last 2 years. They teamed up with a tech firm called Disperse. I don't know exactly what Disperse does, apart from, well, the AI, obviously. But again, they use a system of 360-degree cameras which scan the site on a weekly basis, and they create what they call an interactive digital twin of the building. And this is all tied in with building information modelling, BIM. They're using AI to process the visual data so that progress can be tracked. So this isn't primarily a health and safety application. This is to streamline the construction process. And yes, you're right. They're working on a series of the latest developments at Canary Wharf are some residential towers, and I think I can't remember how many stories the biggest one is. I think it's about 57 stories. I mean, they're big. They're
67
buildings. Is it right? Okay.
57 residential floors in a 67-story building. She heard.
Yeah, so you know, these are multi-story buildings. And the thing about multi-story buildings is, unless they're really wacky or like the shard, they tend to be fairly repetitive. So each floor, especially during the construction process, each floor is almost indistinguishable from the next. And one of the problems is that an awful lot of time is wasted by project managers, site managers, people who are basically running the show by travelling up and down elevators and lifts, checking on progress with a clipboard, taking photographs and going back to their site office and collating it all and trying to keep up to speed with actual progress on site. And this system, has it got a name? Can't remember if it's got a name. But anyway, this system actually keeps an eye on progress itself. So you don't have to, I mean, so much time is wasted simply by leaving the office, putting on all your PPE, getting in a lift and going up to various stories, taking notes, either literally on a clipboard or on your tablet computer or whatever, taking a photograph and then going back and downloading it all and loading it up to the BIM model. Well, this stuff does it automatically. And they've recently started to quantify the savings that this has produced, and it is quite remarkable. Again, I'll quote from the article: reviewing field examples since 2018, it turned out that using the system has saved a typical construction manager 26 hours a week, a 65% saving. Other savings are 18 hours for a planner, while both project managers and project directors save about 12 hours a week. So when you convert that into, you know, money and an actual man hours, it's huge. And in fact, Canary Wharf Contractors say that it's conservatively estimated at 25 times disperses fees across a portfolio of five buildings since 2018. So basically, you know, what they spent on getting this system up and running, they've actually saved 25 times that cost already in the last 2 years. So, I mean, that's a massive improvement in time, cost, efficiency. So, again, it's a massive improvement.
But take it to its logical conclusion. If you've got all the cameras doing the work of so the site manager doesn't have to run around the site, why can the site manager then not work from home? Why does he need to be there, or she?
Well, good question. That question hasn't been addressed in the article, I must confess. But it's certainly a question which arises, especially after the past year when so many people have found that they can do their jobs at home more just as efficiently as they could in the office or on site. Yeah, I don't see why that shouldn't be the next step. And anything, you know, we've talked about this many times in different applications. For example, off-site construction is all about taking people and processes away from site, and that has huge benefits in terms of efficiency, cost, health and safety, of course. So if a site manager can actually be off-site, an off-site manager, as it were, then why not? I don't see why not. So yes, I mean, another thing which is pointed out by Canary Wharf Contractors is that the system, and I'm sure that project managers all over the country will be able to relate to this, the system allows them to focus on where should we be rather than where are we in terms of the critical path and progress. Because knowing where you are is obviously important, but being able to say, is that where we should be, is a completely different question. So it enables you to compare your progress to where you should be, and you can make adjustments according to that. So you're focusing on the target all the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. The third article was a smaller article, which actually is very, very similar. We've mentioned this company before. It's very similar to the system which is being used at Canary Wharf in terms of its application and its possible usage, which is a system called BuildDots. It was developed in Israel, actually. BuildDots is a firm as well as the actual product. And they opened an office in London last year. And they're now touting their system to people in the construction industry. Again, it uses cameras around the site to capture data. And it relates particularly to the BIM model of a project. I don't know whether it actually works only in relation to a BIM model. But again, it provides contractors with accurate data in real time, And they say it enables them to make better decisions, analyze project performance, and save precious time and money. So again, it's going in the same direction as this disperse system at Canary Wharf. So, you know, there are loads of people working on systems like this at the moment. And
except the build dot system, though, it's not, the cameras aren't sort of fixed on site, sort of moving or turning around. The person walking around the site has it on, it's like a GoPro.
Yes, that's right. On his
hard hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is an interesting twist.
The chap you've got a picture of in the magazine looks faintly ridiculous, I've got to say, with this camera perched on top of his hat. But it's the same concept of GoPro, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Action
junkies who jump down hills and cycle around catching all their activities.
Yeah. Clearly, one thing that the BuildDot system probably doesn't lend itself to is home working. If you've got to walk around with a camera on your hat, you've got to be on site to make it actually mean anything. But again, I suppose in many ways that reintroduces a bit of the human element to the AI in terms that you're using your human knowledge and your intuition to actually direct the camera where you think there might be an issue, so you are actively looking into various corners and at particular elements of the building in order to record that information, whereas the disperse system uses fixed cameras, so that relies on the cameras being located by a human being in the optimum position in the first place. The BuildDots one means that you can actually effectively move that camera around wherever you want it to be. So it's a different approach, but with the same aim in mind, which is to use artificial intelligence to improve efficiency and reduce costs.
But you could, I take your point about you can look at it in person and on screen if you're using the BuildDot system, but the BuildDot system you could just use with a herd of St. Bernards or something, couldn't you?
Yeah, the thing about a herd of St. Bernards, I'm not sure that a herd is the collective noun for St. Bernards, by the way. I think it should be a pack. Yeah, but they're not construction experts, are they? I mean, most dogs aren't particularly useful on site.
No, but they're just carrying the camera around.
Yes, they are, but it's random. It's totally random. Well, they will tend to concentrate areas where they think there might be a ham sandwich stashed, or
make sure that canteen,
something like that. I'm not sure I'd trust it to a dog to look into the right places. If you've got a trained project manager with this GoPro stuck on his hat, then at least he'll be looking into the places which are relevant to the project itself, and not into things which are purely dog centric.
It sounds like a pretty AI-heavy issue of the magazine this month. Anything else in there of interest?
Yes, I mean, obviously AI is the big feature in this month's issue, but there are other things. There are a couple of pieces written by you, Phil, and we've covered these topics before. We spoke about employee ownership on the podcast previously, and regular listeners will have heard that discussion. So this is a question of why are an increasing number of small to medium-sized businesses, particularly contractors, selling their businesses to their employees? So that's discussed at length. We're looking at training as well, and again we have an article written by yourself about what's happening with the CITB at the moment, because as listeners will know, the Construction Industry Training Board has undergone several fairly seismic changes over the last year or so. So we're basically just summarising that. We're looking at another regular theme on the podcast, which is electric plant. There have been some developments in electric plants, so we're looking at that. And also there's a little piece about grasscrete, which is a term which is specific to a particular product, but it tends to be used as one of these sort of portmanteau phrases, rather like Hoover or JCB, and about how it's been used to mitigate flooding, and flash flooding in particular as well, and to introduce a sort of greenery into the built environment. So that's basically the issue this month. It's out already. We'll be out online in a few weeks' time.
Yes, to explain to readers, everything in the magazine will be on, as will the whole magazine as a PDF, but also the articles from it will be online at constructionindex.co.uk in due course in the next couple of weeks, I imagine. But we like to give our paying readers who get the magazine by subscription delivered to their doormat first dibs on it so that they get their money's worth.
Yeah.
And you can subscribe to the magazine, which is currently bi-monthly, but we hope to go back to monthly as soon as possible, by clicking on the appropriate page of the website. I think it's constructionindex.co.uk/magazine.
That's the one.
And it's £5 an issue, which is well worth it. But if you keep your eyes open, folks, just between you and I, our patrons are always doing Christmas offers, Easter offers, Good Friday offers. There will be an offer along before you can know it. So look out for offers on for reduced price subscriptions, because it makes it well worth it. But if you're impatient to read what Dave's been talking about immediately, it's just £5 an issue or £30 for the year.
Yeah, and you can order one online, yeah. Okay, so are we done, Phil?
I think we are done. I was thinking of talking about the construction minister. We've got a new construction minister this week, but I'm worried that by the time we get this conversation buckled up and put out online and into the pod stores, that they will have changed again. She came along on at the weekend, and who knows how long she'll last. The last one only lasted a month. Anyway,
that's right.
Don't want to talk about that. Can't keep up.
No, okay. All right, then.
So we'll call it a wrap then, David, yeah?
Yes, I think so. That's enough for this week.
So we'll speak again next week. Everyone, thank you very much for listening once again to Reconstruction. But from David and I, we'll be back again next week. Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.